This is Hannibal here from thehannibaltv.com, and we are simulcasting this today with John Paz of the two-man power trip of wrestling, the god of podcasting, as some fans call him, and the former co-host of the popular Taskmaster Talks podcast with none other than the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, as you would say, Kevin Sullivan, who sadly passed away last week. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing okay. How's everything going with you? How are you doing? Besides randomly going on mute.
Yeah, besides my microphone randomly going on mute, I'm saddened by that news, but I think we both aren't surprised by it. How did you find out?
So Andrew Anderson, I found out he actually posted it on social media very, very early last week. So that's when I saw it, and then I got confirmation. So I was like, oh boy. And obviously Andrew is very, very close with Kevin. So, I mean, he believed him, and obviously you knew he was accurate. So, wasn't as shocked, I guess you would say, because I knew he was not doing too well, but still very saddened. I mean, it's just terrible news. One of the best guys, definitely one of the best guys in the business, for sure. One of the smartest guys in the business, for sure, as well.
Yeah, I actually heard Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer Radio about Kevin Sullivan that went into fairly detail about him, and he said one of the things about Kevin, which made sense after he said it, after listening to your podcast, is he put everybody over. So that's one of the reasons why he was so well-liked. He always put everybody over. Is that something you noticed?
Yeah, big time. It's just funny. Sometimes, like, even Benoit, Chris Benoit, his rival, you know, obviously everything we know about what happened with Woman and Benoit and Kevin, but he always put him over. He said he was the best wrestler. He was the best worker. He didn't mind putting him over. All this stuff about him, I was like, it's like, wow, he's so humble in a certain sense, but just so positive about the guys. But even Benoit, you figure he'd probably rip him or say something, or, you know, maybe he's a little too stiff or a little too snug. Took no cheap shots, said nothing bad about him, didn't rip him at all for leaving WWE with the belt. He, I mean, he didn't really rip him ever, which is kind of surprising. He kind of put him over. Just of all people you expect, all right, at least he'll probably put down Benoit, but nope. Hogan, of course, is his buddy. He always put over Hulk. So it just seemed like he never really put down anybody. It did seem like he put over everybody, for sure. Very positive.
That's a good point. He never said anything negative about Benoit ever. And he's done a lot of interviews about Benoit. So that's very interesting. One person that maybe you've seen it, because I know you're possibly Hulk Hogan's biggest fan. I didn't notice Hogan said anything about the death, did he?
No, I was kind of maybe a little surprised. But I know, obviously, if he's busy or maybe he's upset by it, or you never know how some people take the news and death, but obviously that's a long, long time friend of his. But I did not see anything from the Hulkster or from the Hulkster camp about the death of Kevin Sullivan. I mean, I would imagine he knows about it, but you know, it's up to him when he wants to respond or what he wants to respond with, but did not see anything yet from the Hulkster. I wouldn't say surprised by it, because you can't really, you know, make somebody say something or have them say something. It's up to their own volition, but it just maybe a little surprised that he didn't say anything about it, just because of their longtime friendship.
Yeah, there's always that story that Hulk slept at his house the night before Bash at the Beach, and he was like a close confidant of Hulk Hogan. Yep. So I find that strange.
But yeah, and also. Yeah, maybe he's waiting, or I don't know, maybe I know he's busy doing a lot of different things and traveling the country, but maybe he's waiting until he gets home to do it. I'm not 100% sure, but that story is great about Bash at the Beach 1996. Kevin was basically saying, yes, close friend, yes, close confidant, but since he was the booker and he wanted everything to go according to plan with Bash at the Beach 96, with Hall, Nash, and obviously the mystery man, the third guy, he wanted everything to go right, and he didn't want Hulk's manager to talk him out of it, didn't want Hulk's agent to talk him out, didn't want anybody to talk him out of it. So if you can control the situation, how can you control the situation? How can you make sure the Hulk isn't talking to other people, or maybe somebody's getting in his ear trying to convince him of something else, when Kevin knows that this could be the biggest angle ever in the history of the business? And obviously it was. He was dead on accurate about it, and that Hulk turning heel was going to be the something that's going to resurrect the business and change the business forever, right on that too. He knew, I had to control this. I got to keep him at my house. It's the only way I can trust the outside factors from influencing Hogan from not turning heel. Hulk obviously wanted to do it, but Kevin just wanted to doubly make sure that he was not going to kind of go back on it and say, yeah, I don't want to be a third guy. I don't want to be in the New World Order. I don't want to be a heel. So Kevin was just really, really making sure that that didn't happen, and that these outside forces did not change Hulk's mind.
Somebody's asking on here, when did Kevin Sullivan's health problems start? I know the quote-unquote accident supposedly happened in May, but I recall, didn't that at some point, either last year or the year before, didn't he go to Florida to be with his daughter for a while for health reasons or something like that?
Yeah, I guess I don't want to get in too much detail, but yeah, last year there was a little bit of a health scare as well, and he kind of got over that, but there was definitely, an incident, if you will, before May, but really there was an accident that did occur in May that kind of really sent him on a downward spot. But last year, yeah, he wasn't in great health, but kind of got over it. Ended up coming up here in New Jersey in September for a signing with me. He was in great spirits then. He was feeling a lot better. But yeah, there was a health scare last year as well, for sure. I mean, obviously, 75 years old, not a young man either.
No, and one thing about him, when you're with him in person, I would say the last, since SWE Fury, he seemed to be in a lot of like physical pain from his injuries compared to the first time I met him was actually the last time he ever saw Billy Graham in person back in 2013 in the WrestleCon in New Jersey. I actually caught it on tape, their last meeting. And he was still moving well, but like he was always in good spirits, but it seemed like he was in a lot of pain. I know sometime around the Texas years, his dog had pulled him or something and caused him to fall, and that had aggravated his hip, and he was in a lot of pain. When was the first time you ever met him?
Oh, God, it was 2016 when Big Chris Hughes used to bring him all the way around to New Jersey and all the different signings. He brought him down to WrestleCade one year. He brought him, trying to think where else, was it Philly? Yeah, I think it was Philadelphia, the ECW Arena. So it's probably 2016 when I actually first met him. I interviewed him in 2016 as well, then again 2019, then obviously started Test Measure Talks in 2020. But as far as meeting, it was about 2016. And you're right, by the way, about the dog. There was he pulled him and kind of almost knocked him over and kind of jarred his hip. Obviously he had some hip injuries and had a lot of injuries from wrestling and taking those bumps and just, you know, all those crazy matches with Benoit and everything else. I mean, obviously his body was, and Terry Funk, ton of matches with him, but just his body was through a lot, especially when you're in those crazy, crazy matches. Nasty Boys, I mean, my God, all those crazy matches he was in and all those crazy bumps. I do remember that the dog actually aggravated a bad hip injury at one point a few years back as well.
Yeah, I forget the breed, but it was a very big dog, type of dog.
Yeah, that he had. Yep.
And he lived on an island, right? Do you know exactly where that island was? There's been a bunch of people asking that.
So it's kind of the closest city, I guess, that you would know would be Seattle. That was kind of the closest, but you'd have to take a ferry or a boat to get to Seattle, to get to the mainland. So it's basically, it's in Washington State, but it's kind of, I guess you could say, close to Seattle, but you have to take a ferry to get there. So it's close to Seattle, but not that close to Seattle. But it was so weird out there. He didn't really get cold weather, considering sometimes that Washington area and being so close to Canada and the Pacific Ocean, you would get some cold weather. He really didn't get that much cold weather out there on the island. Very, very cool. Very different place to live, for sure. I guess the currents or something was kind of preventing the cold weather, but he used to always have great weather over there on the island in Washington off the coast of Seattle.
Yeah, it sounds like a great place. At one point, he also had a place in the Florida Keys, I think, at the same time, but some hurricane caused him to move, I believe, or something like that.
Yep, it was in the Florida Keys. He had a business down there. He was doing quite well. Kind of an awesome place to live too, the Florida Keys. And obviously a lot of wrestlers knew that as well and kind of wanted to be out there. I believe the official town that Kevin had lived in was Clinton, Washington. So not too far away from Seattle.
Well, he lived quite a great life. I think my favorite match of his, which I was first familiar with him as a wrestler, was really in WCW in that NWO era, because now you can see all the Florida stuff on the internet. But I wasn't that familiar with it in the past. But I remember, of course, the Brian Pillman stuff and that match where they fought into the bathroom. I remember that day actually watching the pay-per-view. I had split on it with my friend at his house, and that was one of the best times ever in wrestling, and I think one of the best matches in WCW.
Great American Bash 1996, and actually it's probably my favorite Sullivan match as well. Wasn't too familiar, was too young really to see it much in Florida, though now it's fun to go back and go on YouTube all the time and look up the old Army of Darkness, the devil, the worshiping, satanic worshiping gimmick of Kevin. It's really fun to go back and look at it in the YouTube era, if you will, looking at YouTube. But as far as me as a fan, definitely WCW, definitely the matches with Benoit. They had a series of matches, geez, ton of them. But the one you're talking about, which is definitely my favorite, Great American Bash 1996, where they go in the bathroom. And honestly, if you look at that pay-per-view, it might be one of the greatest pay-per-views of all time, too, WCW Great American Bash 1996. There's a ton of good stuff on the card. Obviously, Kevin's the booker, but obviously Kevin might have had the best match on the card, too, with Benoit. So I love that. That's my favorite match. I also love Bash at the Beach 97, the retirement match where Benoit beats Sullivan, ends his career. So not only did he take his wife, take his marriage away from him, he took his career away from him. So talking about always putting somebody over, always putting guys over, crazy. He put over Benoit and had him end his career. Pretty nuts. But that's definitely my favorite match and series of matches from him is the Benoit stuff. Absolutely love those matches. They were awesome, especially Great American Bash.
The one thing, I know he's tried to explain it a bunch of times, but I just don't understand it. And this was above and beyond being nice to Benoit. Like when they let Benoit leave as champion beating Sid, to me, it was like, why? Yep. Even at the time as a fan, I couldn't understand it because Sid was so much more over. But it's like he was going to WWE.
And the crazy part about that, Kevin had a meeting with Sid in the back before this with Arn Anderson. Sid did not want to put him over. He said that, what if the guy leaves? But also Sid was saying, is this believable? This guy is really short. He's really small. I'm putting this guy over. I need an out. Remember, he probably had his foot under the rope, but he tapped out. I know the out was his foot's under the rope and Arn didn't see the foot and he ends up tapping out, but he did tap out to Benoit. So Sullivan actually goes to bat for Benoit, who might be leaving the company, who kind of took his – he with the bat. He goes, listen, brother, I'm the same height as Benoit. What are you saying? You know what I mean? So he's kind of defending Benoit as far as the height thing. Then he was saying Benoit was the best wrestler we had, that it made sense. Benoit was over, that this was the right direction, that they were going to end up keeping Benoit. Obviously, that part did not happen. It didn't end up keeping Benoit at that point. But he actually had a meeting with Sid beforehand and went to bat for Benoit and kind of like talked Sid down from not wanting the job. So he really went above and beyond to have Benoit be the champion. And it's crazy because he was desperately trying to get him to stay, which is, I don't know, to me, crazy as well. But just shows you, again, he's putting over Benoit again. And his career, he's given him the world title. It's just nuts to me how much he put Benoit over.
Of course, there is someone on here, as there always is, making those stupid accusations about Kevin.
Oh, but, God.
Someone's claiming he's like OJ. I can tell you guys from being around Kevin and being around him after he's consumed alcohol, where I think he would have maybe slipped a little bit. Yep. He definitely did not have anything to do with any type of conspiracy. I truly don't think he cared. I don't think he cared at all about women at that point, because I believe she had got violent with Kevin.
It's funny that people said it was the opposite, but actually, if you do look up the police report and you actually get the real information, because Nancy's parents were still friends with Kevin until Kevin, were friendly with him until, you know, they passed or Kevin passed. They were still always kind of in touch with him, very positive with him, nothing negative. She was the one that got in trouble and got arrested and hit him. So, yeah, people always kind of, I guess, assume that, but the role was actually reversed. And Kevin actually moved on. He was happily married after that. So, I mean, he kind of moved on and with his life, and she moved on with hers. So, yeah, that controversy stuff is very strange. But I guess because the devil worshiping gimmick, they just assume, oh, he must be crazy. He must be nuts. He must have done physical harm. But it's actually the other way around.
Yeah, and that was a great gimmick, underrated, with the, what was it, Abuda Dean or something
Abuda like that? Abuda Dean, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they had so many people in that original Army of Darkness. And I remember Billy Graham always telling me how much fun it was doing that whole time in Florida with Kevin.
So different. If you look at it at the time, it's like, wow, where the hell did that come from? Obviously, Ozzy Osbourne was a little bit of an influence. You know, you had Charles Manson was a bit of an influence. I mean, he got influences from outside of wrestling for it, but what a cool gimmick. And it, I love going back now and looking it up on YouTube, because you got Dusty Rhodes feud. I mean, it's so cool. Superstar Billy Graham is there at one point. You got Bob Roop, the All-American Wrestler. He's involved. Mark Lewin, this is a nut job. Woman is the Fallen Angel. You got Locke, Luna Vachon eventually. It's just, what a crazy, weird gimmick. It's kind of just like completely out there, but so cool. And I feel like a lot of the Wyatt family is kind of based off of parts of the Army of Darkness and based off of Kevin Sullivan and based off of that gimmick. Just to me, I feel like I see a lot of influence there, but very, very cool, innovative, different gimmick. Blackjack Mulligan, which is funny because Blackjack Mulligan's like 6'8", Kevin's like 5'8". You would think like, oh man, he's got no chance. But the way Blackjack sold for him and the gimmick, it was very believable that he could beat up these biggest guys, you know, these big guys. Even Dusty's, you know, obviously bigger than Kevin as well, but it's very believable that Kevin would be doing that because of the gimmick and the aura that he had around the gimmick, you know, and his, just the way he looked, his eyes and rolling the eyes and just everything about him in that gimmick was just super cool and super over.
I never heard this Iron Sheik story from Kevin that Jason's bringing up here. Did you ever hear it?
Which Iron Sheik? I'm not actually sure. Maybe Jason give us.
Yeah. Jason, I don't know about Chris Cold having an influence on Sullivan or not. I think Sullivan may have been doing it before Chris.
But, yeah, I feel like Cult might have got some influence from him. And then obviously Cult did that Nazi gimmick, which was completely out of left field and odd. Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about Chris Cult. He never mentioned Cult having influence on him, but he always mentioned Ozzy, like Charles Manson, like guys like that, outside of wrestling, not necessarily in the business. Obviously, that we're talking about, he always gives credit to the guys in the business, but the influences for the gimmick were a lot of outside of wrestling. And he even said he was smaller guy. Obviously, his legs are massive, so he was in shape, a former, you know, weightlifter, bodybuilder, whatever you want to say. I mean, just a massive guy, just as far as that short, stocky build to him. But he had to do a crazy gimmick, had to be something different to get noticed, because hey, you're in the land of giants. So definitely something with the gimmick where he knew he had to stand out and be completely different from what other guys were doing in the business.
The one workout that he told me to do, and I still do it to this day, like when I'm not sure what to do or if I'm not feeling into it, is just do a whole workout of deadlifts. And it's true. If you're not really feeling it and you just want to do a bunch of one rep max deadlifts, you don't have to necessarily be fully into the workout, but you'll leave feeling like you accomplished something. So I'll always think of him when I'm doing that. And whenever I do deadlifts, Vader gave me his deadlifting shoes. So I always wear Vader's deadlifting shoes, and I feel like it gives me more power.
Nice. Very cool. And Kevin had those massive legs, so obviously he did a lot of deadlifts. You know that.
Oh, yeah. And supposedly his wife is quite strong. I don't know if she still is or not, but his wife was like a power lifter, bodybuilder.
Yeah, so, yeah, at one point. Yeah. Yep. I don't know about it anymore, but at one point, yep.
People said he fought Blackjack for a straight week. That feud was before my time, but maybe John knows a bit more about it.
Before my time as well, but I just from what Kevin would tell me about it, that how basically thinking about like how they're going to do this feud, it's a blood feud, and then you know they bring Barry Windham into the feud as well. But he was telling me just the psychology behind it. Blackjack said you can't really sell as much as I'm going to sell in this feud. Just because of the height difference, people won't believe it. So the fact that Blackjack was actually doing more of the selling for a lot of the point was actually like the sympathetic babyface against a 5'8" guy was just amazing. And I loved Kevin's kind of like psychology around it. He's like, I hardly sold for him. And that was like the secret of how like that feud really got over. And let's say Kevin is selling for it. It's almost like this big guy is beating up the little guy. You almost feel bad for him. So they kind of reversed it. And psychology wise, it made a lot of sense. And I was like, wow, kind of something you don't really think about, but that is so true. If you're really trying to learn the business and want to know psychology of the business, who you're fighting, how you're selling, how they're selling, and who's the face, who's the heel, and what you're trying to portray to the audience. So I thought that was really cool, kind of a little history lesson from Kevin that he gave me on Blackjack.
I remember him telling me when we were driving before just a little bit about like when he was still on a good relationship with Nancy in Florida, and kind of the crazy life they led with what was going on in those days. And I think when he met her, it had something to do with her sister too. Did he ever tell you the story of how they met? I only vaguely remember how they met, but she was quite young.
No, I'm not sure. I know her, obviously her and her sister were super close, but no, I don't even think we talked about the story of how they met. Probably should have asked that. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. But I don't know how much he wanted to go into that anymore. You know what I mean? In the last few years,
he did say that he felt that she belongs in the WWE Hall of Fame to me, and I agree with him on that. They probably will never put her in, but she is deserving, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely deserving. And hell, he was saying, obviously, outside factors, Benoit, you know, he's a murderer. You can't put him in the Hall of Fame. But he was saying, wrestling-wise, one of the greatest wrestlers and one of the greatest workers of all time, that he would probably be in outside of the horrible tragedy that happened in 2007. He probably should be in, if you think about it, just if you go by wrestling. But he'll never get in. And Nancy, unfortunately, will never get in either, but she deserves it. As well. But I'm always, like we said before, I'm always baffled that he put over Benoit so much. It's crazy. Like, he was his biggest supporter somehow.
Yeah. I think they will put Kevin in the Hall of Fame because, first of all, he constantly put Triple H over on your podcast. I think you can find saying anything negative at all about Triple H. And they gave a good tribute video to him. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah, that was cool. I was watching SmackDown. I was shocked that they had the video and WWE YouTube and, excuse me, WWE Online had that video. I just wasn't expecting it, because sometimes if a guy didn't work for the company, they almost ignore the history, even though it had a huge impact on wrestling and a gigantic impact, you know, behind the scenes. It just felt like, man, they'll probably ignore him because he was never really in WWE other than the WWF back in the day, but he was really never a part of WWE. I just feel like they would never do that. So I was shocked to see that video. I thought that was so cool, so professional, so awesome of them to do that. Respect the history, respect guys that weren't just in WWE that kind of paved the way. Like Billy's mentioned, their 70s, 80s, and 90s. That was very, very cool. But he definitely deserved a spot in the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about it. I'm shocked he never really worked there, but he owned a gym. He had property. He had other things that he was doing. And obviously he became older in the 2000s that where he wasn't really up for a creative position in WWE or really a job there, but definitely without a doubt should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. And I do think he'll get there, whether it's legacy wing or not. I think he'll get there. Triple H is very respectful of the legends, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think it comes down to that Vince didn't like the WCW guys, because I heard that on the Undertaker's Dead Man show, SummerSlam weekend, that him and Kane were on the stage and Vince told him to beat the shit out of Canyon and DDP, for example. And he supposedly liked DDP. So maybe it was just Vince is like, oh, he was a WCW booker. I don't want anything to do with that. Who knows?
It could be. Vince is nuts. I was just reading a story from 96 where he did an interview. The whole interview was him ripping WCW, how they're spending so much money, and that's why they're beating him and all this other stuff. So, yeah, Vince is definitely a weirdo. He was obsessed with WCW. When he ended up buying WCW, you could tell creatively he just like was shit after that. Pardon my French there, but he was crap creatively after that. So it was almost like his big accomplishment. He wanted to be WCW, wanted to be WCW, and I don't care anymore about creative. Obviously, they were probably not good creatively for about 20 years after that until Triple H came into the fold. But yeah, he's very, very weird about the WCW guys. He wanted to give them no props, no respect, always wanted the job. I think it was Bruce Pritchard was talking about the Dusty story and Pat Patterson with Macho Man about how Macho was like, man, he goes, the WrestleMania match needs to be longer. This match needs to be longer. Like the matches against Macho and Dusty were a little too short. Macho thought they deserved more time, thought Dusty should get more offense, should get more respect. And Pat Patterson and Vince told Bruce Pritchard, and I guess they told Macho, don't sell as much for him. He's from the competitor, and that's really NWA. So we're going back all the way back then. So he hated the NWA. He kind of didn't really show Dusty enough respect just as far as in ring, but he felt the same thing about the guy who was booking the NWO and the guy that's booking WCW when they're beating him for 83 weeks, really 2 years straight. It was really 104 weeks. Just crazy to think that Vince would ever like acknowledge him. In his heart of heart, he hated Sullivan for booking WCW and almost putting him out of business and kick his ass for 2 straight years.
Did AEW have any mention of him on air? I know they put out a graphic of him.
I didn't notice any on-air mention, but I did see the graphic, which obviously very, very classy, and Khan respects the business too. I mean, obviously definitely respects Sullivan and what he was able to do. Hell, if Sullivan didn't do what he was doing, AEW wouldn't be on TNT. So, you got to give the respect, but I didn't see that anything of them mentioning him on air, but I did see the graphic, which was nice, obviously respectful.
I know I can say that Sullivan was at least pitched to AEW, I believe, at least once.
Yes.
I know the guy, he actually got a bunch of guys hired in AEW, but for whatever reason, maybe it was his mobility issues. It didn't work out, which is unfortunate because it would have been – not that they would listen to him on creative because they have some of the best minds ever, but that would have been –
I know. Got it. He would have been in a long list of guys that Tony just doesn't listen to again. That would have been great to have him on there as creative or an advisor role or just like somebody to throw ideas off of or like, hey, how do we structure this? How do we build a storyline? How do we build a heat, which seems to be a huge issue. They never really build good heels or they never really build heat. Hey, who's the master of building heat and building heels? The guy that created the NWO, Kevin Sullivan. So I feel like he would have been a huge help, immense help. But God, I talked to so many guys that work for AEW and have left now, and they don't listen to any ideas, no matter how much respect the guys and how the business, experience the guy has in the business. For some reason, Tony just not listening to anything but his own ideas, which is just crazy because you could have had Sullivan, you could have been, building some heat, building some guys, building some characters. All for naught. Should have done it, though. Should have, would have, could have, I guess.
One thing I'm really getting sick of hearing from Tony Khan is this is so exciting. This is the most exciting time. I think he used exciting like 4 times in one paragraph of a recent announcement. And it's like, stop telling us this is the most exciting time in AEW. Everybody knows it's not.
Right. Like, definitely not.
At least try and come up with something else to say other than that, because it's like, we know it's not the most exciting time. The most exciting time is when it was created. It's not even close to that now.
But, yeah. Or when Punk was there, drawing those gigantic houses, that was the most exciting time in AEW by far. What Sullivan could have done for AEW in his prime. Yeah, that's right. I totally agree. He would have been awesome. He would have been building up some of those guys as great heels instead of just having them almost be like a joke.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like, I don't know, they have all these legends under contract. They should put more legends, like guys like Sullivan, with people and like help get them over. But whatever, there's someone asking Barbara, actually, who always comments on your videos, has Steve Kern made a statement? I know they were good friends.
Yes. If you go to his Facebook page, he had like a very nice thing basically saying, you know, him and Kevin were great friends, really, really good friends. So yeah, if you go over to his Facebook page, I think it's just Steve Kern. He actually posted pictures and posted something earlier this week.
Yes, Jason. I think Sullivan said, didn't he have some contact with Stephanie at one point,
yes, but wasn't
serious?
Yep, had a meeting with Stephanie. Wasn't serious at all. He owned his gym. He owned property in Florida. It was worth way too much money. It was a gigantic facility. He was not leaving that. But it was one of those things from Stephanie, kind of due diligence kind of thing. Like, hey, WCW's over. Let's see what's going on with Kevin. Let's see what he's doing. Is he still doing wrestling? Does he want to do creative? Do we need help? So it was one of those things where Stephanie just checked in. Didn't work out for either one of them. I don't know if she was as serious about hiring him, and obviously he didn't want to go there. So it just timing was terrible at that point. So it was not going to happen for WWE and Kevin.
Barbara and Bill are bringing up his mic skills. I remember actually after I watched one of your podcasts of him talking about why he had Bob Roop join the Army of Darkness because he had a lot of heat and he was half blackballed. And I went and I looked up the promo he was talking about with Roop, and it was a great promo, and I'm sure it was pretty much off the cuff. So just goes to show you the amazing mic skills he had back in those days.
Definitely a great promo guy, especially back then. Some of the stuff he would say is like just off the wall. Even, you know, Abuda Dean or whatever, when he would say that, it's just like, what is this guy talking about? But you're fascinated by it just because it's different. It's unique. He's an awesome talker, super smart guy. So he was a great orator, if you will. He knew how to communicate with the audience. He knew how to convey that he's this crazy monster heel who's not really a monster. He's only about 5'8", you know what I mean? He's not a satanistic devil worshiper. So he a great promo guy. Yeah, you're right. Right. And Barbara, and I forget who else said that there, but underrated for sure as far as mic skills. Great promo guy. I know a lot of people say, oh, the WCW stuff was hokey, but that was because of the Dungeon of Doom. That's what Hogan kind of wanted. So even then, I enjoyed his promos with the Dungeon of Doom as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first time. Like, I saw him on tapes because we didn't get TBS here in Canada as part of your general cable package. So I would see like WCW and NWA tapes of him. But the first time I regularly saw him was during the Dungeon of Doom, which I'm similar age to you. I was like grade 6-ish, grade 5-ish at that time, I think. To me, it was awesome. The Master was pretty damn cool. And yep. Like, look at the list of guys that were in the Dungeon of Doom. Even Lex Luger was in there at one point, Vader, Kamala. I mean, Brutus Beefcake's underrated. Yeah. There was so many good guys in there. Yes, there was some silly stuff, but I just remember those promos. I always look forward to, oh, who's going to be in there this week? And Kevin acting all crazy with his eyes rolling back, talking about the Master, and the Master with his big voice sitting on that throne. As a kid, like, I loved it. And I liked Hulk Hogan back then too. So I was into that kind of stuff.
Definitely very hokey, definitely very 80s-ish, very cartoonish for that era. But it is fun. Dungeon Doom is just like a fun gimmick. Obviously, if you really look at it, it's all guys that Hogan was very comfortable working with and all guys Hogan loved. Love the Master, King Curtis. Love Sullivan. Obviously, Sullivan is the booker as well, but he loves Sullivan. Yeah, he's the one that brings the Giant into the fold in WCW. So he obviously was very keen on working with him. Kamala, he brings in. He loves Kamala. Haku, a.k.a. Ming, is in the Dungeon of Doom. Loves working with him. The Shark, a.k.a. John Tenta. Obviously, we know him as Earthquake. He loved working with him. He loved working with the Zodiac, a.k.a. the Booty Man, a.k.a. Brother Bruda, a.k.a. his boy Bruce Beefcake. So all those guys were guys that he enjoyed, all those guys that he liked, all those guys that he liked to work with, even Luger to a certain extent. So it was kind of like a Hogan love fest, is all the guys he loved, all the guys very comfortable working with, all the guys he wanted to work with. And Kevin knew that full well. Like we've talked about on the podcast a million of times, I love talking about Dungeon and Doom with Kevin, because he's saying like the reason he did that was to get Hogan comfortable, but also show him like all right, like, this is kind of passe. Like, we need to move on. You probably need to turn heel. We could turn this business around. We could change the business forever if we do this. And it was almost like means to an end. The Dungeon of Doom led to the NWO, whether, you know, we realized it at that time or not.
Yeah, and people don't like to admit this, but the Hogan versus the Butcher feud actually sold out the Nashville Municipal Auditorium, and it was a great Starrcade pay-per-view. It actually did better business-wise than Flair Steamboat, and that's a fact, sadly. Flair Steamboat wasn't sold out in that same arena, and I'm a huge Ric Flair fan.
And Flair Steamboat, that might be the greatest match of all time. Those series of matches are probably the best matches of all time to me. I know people raid matches and they want to do their own thing, but to me, Flair Steamboat and that series of matches is probably the best matches of all time. And that match in particular might be the greatest match, might be my favorite match or one of my favorite matches. But that's the power of Hogan and Hulkamania, which Kevin knew. It's like, you got to use your top guy who everybody knows. He's a household name. He's mainstream. And he's the most over guy. So that's, of course, he's going to outdraw. No offense to Flair, who may be, you know, one of the greatest draws. He's not the greatest draw. Hogan is the greatest draw of all time. And I actually did enjoy the Three Faces of Fear, which is obviously the Butcher, Kevin Sullivan, and the Avalanche together. I thought that was really cool, which is the precursor to the Dungeon of Doom. So it's like kind of Hogan, Savage, and Sting versus those three. That was very cool and very different. That obviously then leads to the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, because Earthquake was still fresh at that point. People remember him because he got slowly moved further and further down the card, and they kept changing his gimmick. But when he first came in, he was over. But I think WWE had an issue with them calling him Avalanche or something because it was too close to Earthquake. Then he had to change to the Shark. And
yep. And I know the Butcher obviously couldn't be the Butcher because Abdul the Butcher, I think, ended up suing WCW over that. So they had to change his name a million times. Then he was the Man with No Name, the Booty Man, Brute Eye. I mean, just had a million different names, a million different gimmicks. And then they changed, obviously, Avalanche to the Shark. And then he was John Tenta. So, yeah, they so many different name changes for these guys. It was crazy. Even Boss Man. Remember, he was Big Boss when he first got there, or The Boss. And they ended up changing that. He was the Guardian Angel. They couldn't be the Guardian Angel, they were going to assume. Always had difficulties with names in WCW.
Yeah, and that actually hurt those wrestlers, because if you remember, Boss Man was really over when he was The Boss, I think he was called, when he first came in.
Yep.
Then his push, every gimmick he had, his push slowly went further and further down until he went back to WWE and finished up his career with a pretty good run.
And that was awesome, because he got to be McMahon's bodyguard, and then he got to kill be a part of Big Show's dad's funeral and killed Al Snow's dog and all that stuff. Yeah, he was awesome when he made his return to WWE. What a shame. WCW just had too many guys. They were too top-heavy to really give him a good push. But then at the end, remember, WCW, he was just Ray Traylor.
Yeah, and again with John Tenta, when they shaved his head or something and he had to give some stupid speech, I think I recall saying his name's John Tenta. And it was just like, it was horrible. It was sad.
Yeah. Kind of unfortunate.
But as far as the Giant, you mentioned Paul White. To me, his best time was the Dungeon of Doom, whether that was his first match or not.
Yeah.
Yep. Certainly his current AEW run, although he might be making the most of his career, is the probably the most forgettable time of his career. But like when he came in as the Giant, and a lot of people, the internet was in its very infancy, actually thought he was Andre's son. I mean, to me, that was the best version of him.
Which is funny, because Vince McMahon said to him, I'm going to book you. I know how to book Giants. WCW doesn't know how to book you. Sign with me. And obviously signed the deal that was like a 10-year contract, $1 million a year, whatever the heck it was. It was a huge deal at the time. In the contract was that he had to win the title a certain amount of time. So great deal for him. Can't blame him. Great job. But man, Vince McMahon did not know how to book the Big Show at all. Booked him horrible. I don't even know if I particularly really like that name or not either. The Big Show, the Giant, was so much better. He was so much better booked than WCW. Bad English there, but way, way better booked than WCW under Kevin than McMahon. McMahon horribly booked him. Horrible.
My memory of the Big Show is I was an extra once in Montreal, and he was backstage in the dressing room with a laptop showing everyone midget porn.
Oh, geez, what the hell?
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Weird.
Yeah, it would be interesting if, of all things, the Big Show liked. I'm not saying that was like 2005, January 2005, but that stands out to me. It's like, what the hell is going on here? As an extra, you're just trying to lace up your boots. Okay, do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. Someone says his first match was against Hulk Hogan. Yes, it was. And then that was through the whole Kevin Sullivan thing, getting him over.
Yep. Literally, your first match in wrestling, really his first match is going to be against Hogan on pay-per-view, which a lot of people, in WWE, Bischoff included, kind of consider Halloween Havoc the biggest pay-per-view. I know everyone kind of traditionally, even Kevin would say it's really supposed to be Starrcade, but Havoc really ended up being perhaps their biggest pay-per-view. Was his first match. So, I mean, man, he really knew how to get this guy over. He's pretending it's Andre the Giant's son. He's feuding with Hogan. He ends up winning, technically. So, and ends up technically winning the title, obviously, which leads to World War III, where it's vacant, and there's a 60-man battle royal for the vacant WWE title, which Macho Man wins. But the whole thing was, man, they made him look like $1 million. It was great booking by Kevin. Just great.
Yeah, and the one thing I was going to ask you about, if you knew anything about this, Kimberly Page told, it seemed like when I asked her about women, she was talking about their relationship being complex, and it, without really saying it, it seemed like there was a bit of heat there. Then I saw DDP had made a post that things were kind of rough with Kevin, but he put him on the phone while he was in the hospital. Your buddy Joe Gomez put him on the phone with Kevin, and they kind of made peace. I never heard Kevin ever say anything but good about DDP. Were you shocked to hear like DDP come out with this story that, that there was some friction between them at one point?
Yes, very shocked, because we actually a few years ago did an episode on DDP, and DDP sent over a text to Kevin. Thank you. I listened to the show. Great episode. So I knew nothing of any sort of heat between them at all. And Kevin did nothing but put him over. Always had nice things to say about him. Was very, very positive. And he shared the text with me that DDP sent him, thanks. And, make sure you thank John. A great, great show. He really enjoyed it. Thank you for putting him over so much. So didn't know about that. Didn't hear about that. I thought that was kind of crazy to really, because I just thought they were buddy-buddy and good friends.
Yeah, it's strange. I wonder, I guess we'd have to maybe ask DDP or Eric Bischoff what it was about more. If there's
I wonder, though, the only thing Kevin ever mentioned as far as maybe some dissension, obviously I don't know the whole story, but some dissension was DDP was trying to say that, hey, I'm the one that should be Goldberg. Remember how over DDP was in 90? I mean, he was just gigantically over, one of the most over guys on the roster easily. I mean, the roster had friggin' Sting, Luger, and Goldberg there at the time. So pretty amazing that DDP was that over, but he was trying to petition Kevin that he should be the one to end the streak and beat Goldberg, and Kevin said no, and then it ended up being Nash. So I don't know, maybe if that ended up causing some heat, that's the only thing I could really think of, but I had no idea. Didn't know about any sort of heat between them. It didn't seem like it, the way Kevin talked about DDP. Absolutely loved the guy.
It seemed like Kevin, I mean, I had talks with him I remember having talks with him around 2017, where he was telling me that he agreed with me that it wasn't time to kill Goldberg's streak. But then in later years, it seemed like he changed it to, maybe he just wanted to be more agreeable with everyone because he knew his time was coming. But I do definitely think that was the beginning of one of the nails in WCW's coffin. I don't think Nash was necessarily the wrong guy to beat him, but there was just so much left in that Goldberg streak, and that's something that Kevin booked as well.
Technically, though, at that point, Nash was the booker. Technically,
Nash booked his defeating of Goldberg. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, Kevin started the streak, but this, maybe you could mention this. In that same Wrestling Observer Radio, I heard Meltzer and Alvarez talking about Kevin, and Kevin told me this story too. And he liked to tell this story that Goldberg lost. He had Goldberg lose on TV before the streak actually happened, but no one remembers it Did that actually happen? I know he lost to Chad Fortune, I think, at one point, but was that televised?
So that was a dark match, a part of a TV taping. So he relayed that to Arn Anderson as far as getting that job done and Chad Fortune getting the win. I actually interviewed Chad a few years ago about it, and it's in the archives for TMPT, which was really fun to get him on. Really cool. What a rare, cool guest. But he beat him. As far as him losing on TV, I'd never heard of it, never saw it. I remember Kevin mentioned it, but I was like, I don't know about that. I just thought maybe he was misremembering it because it was Chad Fortune and it was at a TV taping. So that's the only thing I could think of. But as far as the streak itself, he was saying he wanted a Mike Tyson-esque guy, like a tough, badass guy with an awesome look, with charisma, that could just go undefeated like Tyson did for a while, just dominate. It doesn't have to be fast, it could be quick, and the guy's going to really get over it. It's going to be a skyrocket thing. So his push of Goldberg and him thinking like all black, like Mike Tyson, filming him in the back like the boxers, they would film them walking to the ring. Just really, Kevin thought of all these awesome things. It's almost kind of overlooked, but man, the streak, that was one of his greatest things that he ever booked. That was awesome. It definitely had more legs left. I don't think Starrcade was maybe the spot for it, but when I was telling Kevin, I was like, hey, when I rewatched Starrcade, the crowd pops big for Nash win. So Nash was over huge. They were loving him and Hall together again. So it was kind of a pop for that night, but I do think it was a mistake. Kevin thinks the way it was done was a mistake. He thinks they maybe should have had like a few matches together. Nash can beat him, maybe not at Starrcade, maybe a little bit down the road, but he thinks he should have beat him straight up. That the cattle prod and everything else he thought was too convoluted. Everybody interfering, Disco and Bam and Bigelow and all these security guys again. He just thought it was too convoluted. He didn't like that. That's not how he would have booked the end of the streak, but he was obviously buddies with Nash, loves Nash, so he would never badmouth Nash for the booking. He just said he would have done it differently.
Yeah, and for Kevin, as far as his bravery, I guess we could say, he did confront Nash at one point. They did have a little hotel room confrontation, I seem to believe. And he also, and you discussed this with him, and I know it's true because I've heard it through other people too. When Scott Steiner, I think, did that that promo on Ric Flair, who, by the way, Ric Flair put Kevin over after he passed.
They were buddies. Yeah, very close.
Steiner. He was the only. Flair wasn't. I believe Steiner's telling the truth that Flair ran and hid probably after that. But Kevin actually confronted Scott over that,
which is awesome. I love the asking him about that because he remembered it so vividly. It was so cool. And it wasn't one of those things where he confronts him like he wanted to fight him. He's technically the boss. He's technically the booker. He's confronting him, asking him, like, why did you do that? Like, where did that come from? You're not feuding with Rick. And why are you telling the people to watch Stone Cold Steve Austin on WWF that the WWF show is better? He was actually, like, kind of just being man-to-man with Scott, which nobody else did. And he wasn't saying it like he was trying to be brave. He was just trying to be like the boss and be professional and try to get to the bottom and be like, Scott, what the hell are you doing? You might get suspended, which of course he got fined and suspended for. But it's like, what the hell are you doing? Why did you do that? But he said nobody else would do it. And it wasn't the fact that he was just the only one with the courage. It just was a natural thing. Like, he had to ask him, like, and he wasn't afraid of him. Obviously, he was just like, Scott, what the hell was that? What are you doing? Why would you do that? So I always found that story so funny because nobody else is doing that to Steiner. And Steiner wasn't mad at him or anything either. He was just like, F Flair, and I spoke my truth. And, you know, he wasn't really being too forthright of like why the hell he really said it. But it was just very, very cool that Kevin was the only person to actually kind of confront Steiner, and probably really the only person really to confront Steiner in WCW just about anything. I know obviously DDP did once. They ended up getting into a fight and Steiner obviously won that one. But Kevin really, you know, was man to man, went eye to eye with him, and just was like, what the hell was that all about?
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about Kevin is we've got lots of smaller wrestlers today, but he may have been small, but he was built, he was thick, he was strong. Yeah.
He portrayed bodybuilder body. Yeah.
You would still be afraid. Your average person on the street would still be afraid to fight him. It's not like today. I mean, I can't say anything because it's a totally different business. But like today, there's so many smaller guys that you would have absolutely no fear of fighting. Whereas like back when he was in it, if you were small, you would still have to have a mystique about you.
Yep. And you'd have to be built, and you'd actually have to actually kind of look like a wrestler. So he knew that, being that he was small. So weightlifting was a big part of his thing, and he was obviously super, super strong. Sometimes back in the day, he'd lift with Ultimate Warrior. Sometimes back in the day, he would lift with Kevin Nash. And these guys are obviously gym rats beyond belief, two of the strongest guys ever in the history of the business. So he was no slouch at all in the gym, really took care of himself. Great. He was always in great shape. And I always loved it randomly. I always loved his punch. The way he delivered the punch was very legit.
He had quite a memorabilia collection too, didn't he? Did he ever talk to you about that? I know he's told me about it, but I'm so not a sports fan that it went in one ear and out the other, but I know you're a big baseball fan too. What's some of the stuff that he collected?
I don't remember exactly what he had, but he would tell me like old autographs, old books, old programs, a lot of baseball memorabilia, a lot of boxing stuff. So he had a lot of cool old school memorabilia stuff. He was just so into Brandon Saint, into the Boston Red Sox, who obviously paid tribute to him at Fenway Park, which was awesome. Still, he was still friends with those guys.
What did they do?
Oh, they put him on the scoreboard. They said in remembrance of Kevin Sullivan on the scoreboard. So very cool of the Boston Red Sox. I know he still had some friends over there too, and obviously it shows. So nothing but respect for him. Was covered. A quote of mine was in the New York Post, and the New York Times actually, by the way, also quoted me in there as well. So it shows you, in this little bubble of wrestling, he's being recognized by the Boston Red Sox and the New York Post. He's in the New York Times. Just shows you, the level of respect that everybody had for Sullivan. But his collection was nuts. Absolutely loved the Red Sox. Was obsessed. Loved baseball. Huge historian for baseball. Loved boxing. Had a bunch of collectible stuff from there as well. Certain collectors and certain guys would give him stuff sometimes. Like, hey, this is cool. And, they give him some freebies. But he was almost like a historian for all things sports, especially baseball and boxing.
Yeah, and I don't even know how he fills it all in his brain with everything he also has for wrestling, because he's one of the best historians ever in wrestling. And he still, I don't know if he actually watched it too often other than YouTube clips in recent years, but he kept up with everything that was going on overall.
But I would throw this out there, and somebody could say Lanny Poffo or somebody else, but I'd say smartest man in wrestling. If you actually got to know him, and I obviously became friends with him over the years, he could literally have a conversation about anything and almost give you like historical fact about it. I mean, we were watching college football once, and he was giving me, stats about old school teams, like hey, Boston College in this year or Notre Dame in this year. And he would just have facts out the yin yang of stuff. So to me, maybe the smartest guy ever in wrestling, could definitely be a historian for many different sports. He knew so much stuff. And then on top of it, like you said, he did keep up with modern day wrestling. Like, he was talking about Triple H's booking and what he was doing and Roman Reigns. And obviously anybody listening to the show, you knew he loved the Bloodline. He thought it was better than the NWO, which I thought was crazy, but he would just kind of dissect that and go into of why he thought that. And hey, like, this guy came out better on the other side. Sometimes when you feuded with the NWO, those guys didn't. This is what Triple H was doing differently. And this is the Paul Heyman influence on some of the storylines. So, and obviously the Heyman influence is because Heyman is a disciple of Kevin Sullivan. So obviously there's a stuff there, and Kevin hired him into the business. Kevin kind of really got him his start. So if you think about it, like, obviously he passed on some knowledge to Heyman, and Heyman's passing along to Triple H, passing along to Roman Reigns, and putting this into the Bloodline. So Kevin's footprints are still in the business and still everywhere, and he was still following the business like crazy. So he absolutely loved it, and he loved the Bloodline. That was his favorite storyline of all time, believe it or not. He said it was the best, and it said because he got all those baby faces over when maybe the NWO didn't.
Yeah, the only difference I'd say is I don't see Bloodline shirts everywhere. Maybe it's different in the U.S., but I've never seen a Bloodline shirt.
I've seen a couple, but nothing like NWO. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I've seen like hundreds, literally, in my lifetime in the wild, quote unquote. I've seen so many NWO shirts. It's literally insane. Celebrities I've seen wearing NWO shirts. If you go to concerts any summer here, rock and roll bands, you're going to see NWO shirts, hats, and stuff like that. Of course, Steve Austin stuff too, but you're going to see like a lot of old school NWO stuff.
And I don't doubt that WWE is making more money than ever. But the difference is, in the Attitude Era, WWE was selling out. WCW was selling out. Indie shows, you'd go to an indie show, be packed. Right now, I don't know how it is in the U.S. I don't hear that much about indies as much as I did before AEW. It seems like AEW has kind of killed off the indies in a lot of ways, other than GCW is doing all right. But like, overall, it's not like the Attitude Era where you'd go to a random indie show and there'd be 500 or 600 people there. And right. Like both companies were packed. AEW is not doing the greatest right now.
Not struggling.
But yeah. The one thing I'll agree with Kevin, by the way, about the AEW is, like, remember AEW said they were not going to have 2 6-man tag team champions? And I remember Kevin commented on that. Why do you even need one?
Yes.
And they never got rid of the second one. There's still Ring of Honor and AEW tag team champions. And the Ring of Honor one, I'm hearing the big critique is, like, people are excited about the Von Erichs and Dustin having them, but it's not on TV. It's like you put it on the brand that people aren't watching because you need the subscription. It's bizarre. Yes.
Hopefully, though, now that True TV has been changed to TNT Sports or TNT Prime Sport or whatever the heck they're going to call it, it's going to be like an offshoot of TNT Sports. Hopefully, with this new AEW deal that's rumored, hopefully you can have ROH on that new sports channel and then see the Von Erichs on TV. That would be ideal.
Yeah,
that I had an NWO shirt at my wedding too, underneath, and NWO socks on too.
There you go. I'm not surprised at all. And your wedding, your marriage has gone on. You've had a very successful marriage. What year are you in now? And you got a couple of kids too.
Two kids, a marriage, 11 years, believe it or not, coming up, which is nuts to think about. But yeah, time flies. Oof, well, it's going to be 11 years, believe it or not.
Barber said he wanted to take wrestling to India and have a Pakistani heel. I think the whole problem with India is, I guess, because they have a hard time getting people to pay for live events there, from what I understand. You probably know this too.
That's what I heard. Yeah. But I always loved that Kevin loved Jinder Mahal as champion. He loved that just because there were so many people in India. He thought maybe that'd be a great market. I just always tickled me. I like Jinder. I thought he was obviously looks like $1 million. I just tickled me that he thought Jinder was like this great WWE champion. Not that he was bad, but I don't know. I always thought that was funny. He was like, this is great. This is great idea. Great booking.
They killed him by having Triple H beat him in India where they couldn't. That was just, it's like, so it's almost stupid. Like we built this guy all up so Triple H could just beat you in your own country.
So stupid. Oh, and it's funny. He's so much better of a booker than he is when he's a wrestler, Triple H. When he's a wrestler, he's like burying everybody, killing everybody off. When he's a booker, it seems like he's raising all these tides. Like Gunther is now over. Priest is now a main eventer. Bron Breakker is super over. It's like he's like raising. When he was a wrestler, man, he killed all these guys off. Jinder Mahal, geez, Booker T. He had to beat Scott Steiner. Like he had to beat Goldberg, which was just insane. He had to beat Lesnar at Mania, which was insane. It's weird. When he was a wrestler, he just killed everybody. When he's an actual booker, he actually is a million times better and gets these guys over.
You used to have to be like the toughest of the tough to be a pro wrestler, at least have that aura about you.
Yep, but not anymore.
No, but whatever. Kevin had that aura, and he still had some mystique about him. And I genuinely appreciate all the advice you gave to me over the years. I was honored of all the match finishes you gave to me. I wish it could have gone on longer. I was honored. One of the highlights of my life, honestly. It ended up being, I think, the last time he ever managed. I thank God I did this. I just said, what the hell? I'm going to come out to the Dungeon of Doom music.
Nice. With Kevin Sullivan. Yes.
And I was having, like, all I was thinking about was, like, having a mark out moment. Just the other time I had a feeling like that where I just got tingles and people can say what they want, that was living my dream for me, was when I was standing in the ring and Haku came out to his WCW music. I was just like, you know what? I'm living my dream right now. People can say whatever they want. And Haku loved Kevin, and Kevin loved Aku, and like people can say whatever they want about me. I may not have been in a stadium or whatever, but I got to work with some of my heroes like Kevin and like Haku and a whole long list of others. And how many people can say that? And you've worked with your heroes too. You've met your heroes in a different way as well.
Yep. 100%. Pretty awesome. And it's pretty awesome to do the podcast with Kevin, because the NWO might have been my favorite point as a wrestling fan, maybe my favorite thing to ever happen as a wrestling fan. Definitely my favorite time period in wrestling, for sure, is that era, to be honest. I know I love the Hogan era, but I think that's my favorite, that NWO portion. It was just a good time to be alive, and Kevin is responsible for it. He's the man behind it. He's the thought process. He's the booker. He was the one building up Hall, Nash, and Hogan like a balloon and building up all that heat for years. Just the NWO was the best, and it was awesome to be able to kind of not only talk about it with Kevin, but dissect it with Kevin and really, I don't know, like run the gamut of like the behind the scenes and how to book and what he was thinking and like what I was thinking as a fan and like, wow, that's just so cool. Like you never in a million years would I think back in 1996 that I would be talking to the guy that basically wrote, book and controlled the NWO. Just amazing.
And you documented history. And that's why it was great that we shared some of that footage, because it's like, for the rest of time, we now have his opinions on all that detailed stuff. So that stuff is for the real fans and like just for historical purposes. It's great that you got all that documented.
Yep. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, Barbara Sullivan and Terry Funk had a run in PCW. I think it was supposed to be two matches, but Funk's wife got sick, so they never ended up having the follow-up match. But some people complained about that, but they looked like they were having the time of their lives, and PCW let me post that on this channel, so I thought that was pretty cool. And Constable, yes, I had a match with Nash, with Terry Funk refereeing. Talk about another dream moment. And there was 3,000 fans. How great of a moment is that?
That's awesome.
That was amazing. So thank you, John, for this trip down memory lane. I know we both loved Kevin Sullivan. We're both massive fans of his, and we had a lot of respect for him. Where can people follow you if they want to look you up? And are you going to continue the Taskmaster talks, like Instagram and stuff, as far as just a memorial to Kevin?
Yeah, so until I don't even know when, but I feel like a tribute, if you will, for Kevin is definitely necessary and kind of required, I think, for just a little bit of time. I think that is definitely what we should do and will do to keep that up. But you can follow, obviously, Taskmaster Talks on Instagram, but you can follow me on X and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out Patreon, patreon.com/TMPTEmpire. Got a lot of cool stuff on there. Check out TeePublic as well, TeePublic.com/store/TMPT. Get some Hogan era stuff, some TMPT, and even a glimpse into the future of a project with the greatest Canadian wrestler of all time, somebody that you know very, very well. We'll be working on something with him. A big, 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 big project coming up in the not so distant future. So definitely keep an eye on that.
Greatest Canadian wrestler of all time. You're talking about me, right? No, I know who you're talking about, and I think that's really cool.
Yes, yes. We'll go into detail because we haven't really announced anything yet. But yes, something is up there. But definitely, that's something cool. Definitely keep your eye out for that. Keep your eye out for some more Hogan era stuff as well. But this has been great to kind of go down memory lane with you. Obviously, you love Sully. I love Sully. He was the man, probably the smartest guy ever in the history of the business. Just a great booker, great mind for the business. Love that dude.
And I'll just say one more thing about Sullivan. He would still go out all night after the matches and just stay up and catch the plane. He was truly one of those old school wrestlers. He was even doing that like last year. He's as old school as they get. And yes, we'll see him on the other side, wherever that may be.
What is the legacy of Kevin Sullivan? To me, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself. one of the greatest minds ever in the history of the business. Awesome booker. He's the guy responsible for booking the NWO, the single most important booking that's ever been done in the history of the business, resurrected the business, created the Monday Night Wars, created the Attitude Era, and launched WWF into the stratosphere thanks to Hollywood Hogan, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan, turning heel, joining the NWO, which was all a part of Kevin's brain trust, if you will, is all a part of his ideas, all a part of his thoughts, and that was what he wanted and his goal for what he wanted the NWO to be. So you got to give Kevin all the credit in the world for that. Obviously, you got to give Bischoff some credit too, but I give Kevin the boatload of credit on that. To me, the smartest man ever in the history of the business. I know there's a lot of smart guys out there in the business, but Kevin, this guy was like an encyclopedia. He was basically somebody that would know anything and everything about the business, no matter what year it was. Even current day wrestling, he still kept up to it and still paid very much close attention to it. Then you go back in the history of things, the guy is basically a wrestling historian. He knew everything about every territory and every wrestler and what worked and what didn't work. Such, such a smart guy. And not only that, you could have a conversation with him about anything. You want to talk about boxing? He knows everything about boxing. You want to talk about the stock market? He knows about the stock market. You want to talk about owning a business and running a business? He knew about that. You want to talk about baseball? My God, he was a baseball historian as well. So to me, one of those guys, you can have a conversation with him about a myriad of topics. You can talk to him about anything and everything, especially sports, especially boxing, especially baseball, and especially professional wrestling. To me, like I said, smartest guy ever in the history of the business. Awesome in the ring as well, despite being a shorter guy in an era where basically was the land of the giants. He had that aura. He had that presence about him. He had the army of darkness around him, but he had that gimmick where you thought he was a satanic. You thought he was a devil worshiper. You really kind of fell into that trap of like, man, this guy is really scary, really spooky. And just because he's smaller, you don't even really recognize it or pay attention to it because he has that presence about him and you're almost scared of him in a sense. So it didn't matter how big or small he was. You were scared to death of the guy because of that gimmick. And it was just so smart and great time in the gimmick. And he played it so well. And even the feud with Dusty Rhodes was great. Blackjack Mulligan feud. I mean, just what an awesome run he had in championship wrestling from Florida. I also love the WCW stuff, and I mentioned this in other interviews, because I just love that Sullivan-Chris Benoit feud. I mean, obviously you had Nancy, a.k.a. Woman, right there in the middle, and that played off of real life, and did he book his own divorce? Were they really separated anyway? It's one of those things that fans love to talk about. Did he book his own divorce? And that was just so smart of him to kind of capture that as well, because the fans were so into it because they thought the feud was real. They thought they really hated each other. They thought they were really killing each other. So those series of matches were just so damn good. I love the Benoit Sullivan matches. Still go and watch them today. Love Great American Bash 96. I love the match at Clash. I mean, they had a ton of matches, but and of course Bash at the Beach 97 as well, but maybe Great American Bash 96 might be my favorite. But man, just awesome matches, great feuds. Loved his feud with Hulk Hogan as well in WCW as the Taskmaster. And I know the Dungeon of Doom was a little corny, but the ends justified the means. He had to do Dungeon of Doom in order to get Hulk Hogan to do Hollywood Hogan and be a part of the NWO, which changed the business forever. So to me here, just to kind of close it out and put it in a little nutshell for you, the real legacy of Kevin Sullivan is, to me, maybe the smartest guy ever in the history of the business that's in the ring, outside the ring, behind the scenes. R.I.P. Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself, Kevin Sullivan. Kev, Sully, love you, buddy. See you on the other side. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.